What's up, guys? We are back to the RCT Network. Now, been away for a few weeks. I apologize. Had a family emergency pop up. And as you know, I'm actually over in Australia. I just got married a little while ago, so I've been here as we get some visa stuff worked out. But I actually had to head back to the United States for the last 3 weeks because of this emergency. Everything's all good, but didn't have my podcast equipment with me. So I wasn't able to do any shows, make any videos, and I apologize. But while I was away, I was working. And I was working on what I would like to discuss once I got back. Now, over the last 7 days and currently in the midst is a lot of talk on unions. Unions like Teamsters and UAW. Now, UAW is actually threatening a strike coming up here. Teamsters had a strike, and I haven't seen the outcome of their actual deal that they got with UPS, but another large story with Teamsters is Yellow Corp. Yellow Corp has gone out of business, or they not out of business, but has filed for bankruptcy. Before I go down this road, I want to say, am I anti-union? Not really. I believe that workers should have the right to collectively bargain. However, the employer should have the right to maintain their business operations as well. The negotiation between employees and employer should be allowed to take place. And if that involves the employee going on strike, then so be it. But at the same time, the employer should be able to do whatever is necessary to maintain operations because that is their livelihood as well. If that means finding replacement workers or so-called what, scabs, then so be it. It should be a free enterprise and negotiation should take place between the two. If the employees want to hire a representative for themselves, you know, like a union as such, then that is fine. The problem with unions, though, is that they do more harm than good because they stick around. You've heard that expression, there's nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. Well, the same is true with unions. We have this mindset in the United States that we have to be pro-union because we have to be pro-worker, right? We have to support the working man. Well, you can support the working person and be anti-union because unions are not negotiating anymore on behalf of the employees or their members. They're negotiating on behalf of the union. Unions are separate entities now. And not only are they, you know, just another individual entity that collects dues from its members, but they're the largest political lobbyist in the United States. And quite often, I hear both sides, Democrats and Republicans, talk about the problems with political lobbying. But you see, political lobbying is only good when it's on your behalf. So it's okay if these large corporations that the Democratic Party always complains about, that they always bitch and moan about, it's okay if these corporations are giving massive contributions to the Democratic Party. It's not okay if they're giving contributions to the Republican Party. And vice versa, by the way. This goes both ways. But allow me to kind of expose unions and the workings of unions. And I'm probably going to take a lot of heat for this. Why? Because, again, in the United States, as well as here in Australia and around the world, right, we all have this misconception that we need to support unions, and it is unfavorable to speak out against them. But unions are some of the most corrupt entities that exist today, and it's not even close. I mean, the way that unions go about doing business, and I'm going to go into depth on this, it's illegal. It should be illegal almost. But unions do more harm than good. And ultimately, they've taken advantage of the workers that pay them and utilize leverage to grow their own political power. Why do we need unions? Why would there be a need for a union? And that is to, again, help negotiate for better pay and benefits on behalf of the workers, which is fine. But why is it that the largest political donors and lobbyists in the United States are unions? And not only just unions, they're unions that represent public sector workers, government workers, which is funny as hell to me. And it's, why is a teachers union, which is 100% made up of government workers, why is that allowed to exist? And how is it that the Democratic Party, who is the party for the working class, right? It's the Labor Party, or in Australia, you have the Labor Party, right? The ones that support the unions the most. You always hear Biden talking about how he's going to be the most pro-union president that we've ever had. Why is it that when they are in power, unions grow? Unions grow power when the Democrats are in office. But the only reason a union would need to grow in size or in power is if they need to negotiate more, if they are in an environment that forces them to exist in the first place, right? Because the whole point of a union is to negotiate on behalf of the workers. And if the environment, the working environment, is less favorable for the labor, then they're going to go to the union to help negotiate on their behalf. So how come the Democratic Party can have a majority in the House, a tie in the Senate, and have the executive branch, yet unions have to grow more in power? Why? Because unions are nothing more than a way for the Democratic Party to funnel political contributions from people who do and don't support them. And we're not talking about thousands of dollars. We're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. I have a lot written down here in my book, and some of it kind of jumps back and forth, but we're going to go through all this. And I've done a lot of reading and writing in the past 3 weeks regarding this issue. The AFT, which is the American Federation of Teachers Union, is the largest political lobbyist in the world, or one of the largest political lobbyists in the world, sorry. They are extremely left-leaning and ironically represent government employees, right? Randy Weingarten, who I don't know if they are still head of the AFT. Again, if you go on unionfacts.com, you can find a lot of this information. And a lot of this information, by the way, is all true. This is all documented. It's just some of it is not up to date in 2023, at least. But Randy Weingarten, the head of the AFT, makes up $560,000 per year in total compensation. That's far, far, far more than the average teacher. It's not even close. Evelyn De Jesus, who is vice president, makes $269,874 in total compensation. $40,843 is that other compensation and benefits and travel and things like that. So total compensation was $310,717 in 2022. Evelyn De Jesus, the vice president, got a 42% increase in her pay since 2020. Darren Nedro, who is the senior director of field services, was paid $326,124 in 2022, which was a 30% compensation increase since 2021. That's a 1 year compensation increase of 30%. Frederick Ingram, secretary treasurer of the AFT, made a total of $402,565 in 2022. In 2021, he made $312,680. That's an annual income increase of 22%. George Bordenov, senior national representative, saw a 76% increase in total compensation from 2021 to 2022. These are all the high ups of the AFT. You can see where, again, 40% pay increase, 30% pay increase, 22% pay increase, 76% total pay increase for all the high ups in the AFT. In 2021, the average teacher salary was $68,496 on a federal level. And the average teacher saw only a 2.8% annual increase in compensation. Meanwhile, the AFT membership costs $235 per year. The AFT used $49 million in the 2020 election for political lobbying contributions to the Democratic Party. The union openly supports Biden and Kamala Harris on its website, yet only 36% of spending went towards representational activities, while 27% went towards partisan politics and lobbying gifts for the Democratic Party. AFT employee Michelle Rinkett, made $230,000 to spend the majority of her time on political activities. So they literally hired one person to do political lobbying on behalf of the AFT. And they paid them a salary of $230,000. Again, like four times more than the average teacher salary. In 2019, the AFT paid $44.8 million in employee payroll and another $40 million on employee pensions and retirement health benefits. Meanwhile, the AFT members have received marginal, if any, benefit from the AFT. So the union itself costs a substantial amount to not only run, but spends a substantial amount in political lobbying towards the Democratic Party. 98%, by the way, of their political contributions went to the Democratic Party. And all of that money came from the dues paid by its members, the actual teachers they are supposed to represent. Only 36% of the dues they collected went towards representational activities to negotiate on behalf of the teachers that are members. The NEA, which is the largest union in the United States, the National Education Association, it's also the most powerful. Becky Pringle, president, received $449,537 in total compensation in 2022. In 2021, she received $431,317. In 2020, received $361,390 as vice president. She has gotten a 24% increase in total compensation from 2020 to 2022. The NEA spent more than $69.2 million on payroll, and 75% of NEA employees made over six-figure salaries. 42 of them earned more than $200,000 per year. The NEA also spent $41,557,306 on political lobbying and another $119,584,864 on contributions, gifts, and grants, most of which went towards the Democratic Party. Only 6.62% of NEA spending was used for representational services. The NEA charges an annual union due of $202. What do you think about that? Millions of dollars paid in dues by teachers who are hoping that the union is going to act on their behalf and get the best possible benefits and deal for them. It's taking that money and actually not using it to represent the teachers, but using it to give it to the Democratic Party. Now, the NEA also allocated $43 million towards employee pensions, health insurance, and retiree health care. When I say employees, I'm talking about employees of the union, not teachers, not the people that are paying dues. We're just talking about the people who work for the union. The union is the union. It's a separate entity, right? These aren't the teachers. These are employees of the union. It's like hiring a law firm to represent you. And the employees of the law firm are the ones that are getting all the benefits from all the dues paid by the people who are hoping they represent them, right? But it's like me spending $10,000 on a lawyer. He takes that $10,000, he profits it, he gives it to for political donations, whatever. And only 6.6% of what I'm giving him is coming back to me in the form of representational services. The NEA gave $3 million to help pass the Fair Share Act in Massachusetts, which would seek to increase taxation on residents earning more than $1 million in annual income. According to the NEA's own report, teachers are on average earning 6% less income over the last 10 years when adjusted for inflation. The NEA also projected the number of public school teachers to decline in 2023. So while all of the union employees have received substantial pay increases of like 40%, some of them, a couple of them 72%, teachers are making 6% less over the last 10 years, the people that they're supposed to represent. Out of the most 12 expensive states to live in, all 12 of them are forced union states. This is not including the District of Columbia, which is also a forced union area, which is the second highest cost of living behind only Hawaii and is also a forced union area, right? Out of the top 10 states with the highest tax burden, 8 of them are forced union states. Out of the top 10 states with the highest average SAT scores, only 2 were a forced union state, Minnesota and Montana. However, there were 9 right-to-work states in the top 10 because South Dakota and Kentucky were tied. And what I'm getting at here is teachers who are in right-to-work states tend to be better. I put up a video with Arthur Laffer, and he was discussing the difference between California and Texas and about how Texas's test scores are far higher than California's. California is a forced union state. Texas is a right-to-work state. By the way, when I'm saying right-to-work state, forced union state means that if you are working in an industry that is unionized, like teaching, you have to pay union dues. You have to be a part of the union. In a right-to-work state, they can't force you to be a part of the union, yet if there is a union that exists, like for teachers, let's say, the union still has to represent you, but you don't have to pay the dues. What they're seeing is that when people are given the choice in right-to-work states, they're not joining the union. Why? Because they're corrupt. You don't get the benefits. It's just a waste of money. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, another very, very, very large union, the associate director, Michael Messina, received $456,974 in total compensation in 2021. In 2020, he received only $161,860. That is a 182% pay increase in over just 1 year's time. Lenita Waybright, director of benefits, made $435,122 in 2021, which increased from $194,152 in 2020. That is a 124% increase in 1 year. This is a union that directly represents state, county, and municipal employees, the government employees. And the employees in the government, the people who are due paying members of the union, received pay increases that didn't even keep up with inflation. Yet the leaders of the union received 182% pay increase and 124% pay increase. And guess what? Union membership has declined, which means they have less due paying members now. How does that work? In 2016, the AFSCME gave $90,113,105 to the Democratic Party, which was 77% of total political contributions. The Teamsters, James Hoffa, who was then president, made $419,467 in 2021. In 2016, the Teamsters gave $33 million $33,117,533 to the Democratic Party. That is 92% of their total political contributions. That was to the 2016 presidential election. When it came to teachers, I told you they gave 98%, the NEA and the AFT, of their political donations to the Democratic Party, yet over 30% of teachers that were a part of the union, that were due-paying members, stated they voted for Donald Trump in that very election. Another, was it 30-something percent or 40% said they were independent, could go either way, and another, I think it was either 30 or high 20% said that they were liberal. So how is it, even if we just cut it out, if 30% of teachers stated they voted for Donald Trump, the Republican candidate in the 2020 presidential election, yet 98% of dues, or sorry, not 98% of dues, 98% of political contributions that came from the dues paid by that very 30%, by the way, was given to the Democratic Party. Unions do not represent their employees. They do not represent on behalf of the best interests of their due-paying members at all. They represent in the interest of the union itself and nothing more. When unions go and negotiate contracts, they are negotiating contracts that will benefit the union. They are setting them up in such a way that the union still has a need to exist in the future. Think about this. If union, or if the environment, the work environment, was, you know, completely representative of the employee's best interest, right? Like businesses always did what was the best for the worker, there would be no need for unions. Unions need a demand. For there to be a demand, there has to be an issue that persists that employees of these businesses need to pay a union for representation to help them negotiate again for whatever that issue is, either for higher pay, higher wage benefits, better work conditions, whatever it may be. That has to exist, though, for there to be a need for the union. If none of that existed, then there's no need for the union. And why is it that the party that supports the unions, if you support unions, that means you support the workers, right? The idea is to not be pro-union, is to be pro-worker. And a union is just the fallout of poor working conditions. But the problem is that the Democratic Party is not pro-worker, they're pro-union in the sense that they actually support the unions existing because they are getting a substantial amount of money from the union. A union is nothing more than a way for the Democratic Party, like I said, to raise massive amounts of campaign funds from people who don't support them and from people who do support them. It is an ingenious plan, by the way. But if the Democratic Party, like we just saw, where they had a tie in the Senate and a majority in the House for the first half of Biden's presidency, why didn't they pass pro-worker policies that would take care of the majority of concerns that these, you know, employees of these large unionized firms have? Well, they don't do it because they want to create an environment where unions have to exist, because unions, when they exist, are what fuels the Democratic Party. You don't bite the hand that feeds you. Why? Yeah, you're going to come out and you're going to say you're in support of better working conditions, blah, 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 blah. But in reality, you want those conditions to persist and you want to drive up the demand for unions. That's why Democrats support forced union states. Because the more you can get people into a union paying dues, the more money the Democratic Party has. It's a simple equation. This is how it works. When it comes to Yellow Corp, you can find a bunch of different articles about this and a bunch of different opinions, but when you actually go and read and look at the finances, by the way, go look at Yellow Corp's 10K, and it shows a lot of this. Yellow Corp, based out of Nashville, largest one of the largest trucking companies in the country. They had 30,000 employees. 22,000 of them were union members of Teamsters. Now, Tennessee is a right-to-work state. However, when you read Yellow Corp's 10-K, there's a clause that with the agreement with Teamsters, if you were in a state that was a forced union state, you had to join the union as a prerequisite of employment. You had 30 days to make union payments. If you didn't join, you got fired. And as a union security clause, by the way, even in a right-to-work state, they have it stated in the 10-K that they still had to pay dues. You just didn't have to be a part of the union, which is illegal, by the way. You can't do that. You can't force them in a right-to-work state to pay any dues or anything. But in Yellow Corp's agreement with Teamsters, it states that these employees, as a term of condition for employment, within 30 days had to start paying union dues, whether or not they were part of the union. So even out of the 22,000, I'm assuming closer to 30,000 were paying union dues. But we're just going to scale it back to the 22,000 employees that were actually union members and due-paying members of Teamsters. Yellow Corp has filed bankruptcy. The union comes out and says that it wasn't their fault. But the reality is that Yellow Corp had been struggling. And Yellow Corp was trying to put through a plan, which was called One Yellow, where they were basically consolidating a lot of their subsidiaries down and bringing them under the Yellow Corp umbrella. And one of the things that they started doing was they put up a bunch of job listings. I think it was like 136 job listings from what I've seen, for there to be a driver and a dock worker. Teamsters, when they see this, ends negotiations with Yellow Corp because they have in their past agreement a dock worker protection clause and basically states that you can only be a dock worker and you can only be a driver. You can't be both. And Yellow Corp basically was able to tie Teamsters was able to hold Yellow Corp's hands behind their back and cause Yellow Corp to file bankruptcy. It's absurd. The union had so much control and power over Yellow Corp that they were able to control whether or not they lived and died. And guess what? 22,000 members of Teamsters are out of work today. The union doesn't give a fuck about the union members that are paying their dues. They only care about being able to have substantial leverage over the private sector or the public sector in that matter. But what I also want to bring up is when it comes to Yellow Corp, and let me find this here. In, you know, you always hear, oh, well, Yellow Corp's making all this profit, right? And they were negotiating for a new contract to increase the pay of the workers. Now, Yellow Corp had $2.8 billion in total payroll in 2022, which exceeds 50% of their total revenue. 73% of employees are members of the Teamsters. Based on the average math, the average hourly rate of Yellow Corp employee, which I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find a figure, so I just did the math and kind of worked it backwards, $45 an hour. That estimates total dues received by Teamsters union from Yellow Corp employees, just for the 22,000 people, by the way. It could have been more if all 30,000 were paying. It estimates it to be around $112.57 a month per employee. I got that because the Teamsters due are calculated as, I think it's 2.5 hours of monthly pay. So that's $1,350.14 per year per employee, which is roughly 2% of net take-home pay for the employees that cost them in their union dues. Teamsters received $29,702,640 in annual dues from the 22,000 union members of Yellow Corp. This is just one business. Based off of this calculation, the Teamsters made more money off of dues received from Yellow Corp union employees in 2022 than Yellow Corp made in total profit. And not just more, but 36% more. So Teamsters literally made 36% more from Yellow Corp employees than Yellow Corp profited in 2022. Yellow Corp's 2022 profit was around $21.8 million. Teamsters' dues received was $29.7 million. In 2021, only 21% of Teamsters' spending went towards representational activities. In 2016, Teamsters gave $30 million to the Democratic Party, which is 92% of political donations. Teamsters were able to control the livelihood of Yellow Corp through coercive dealings and leveraging regulation that was implemented by the party they funnel substantial funds to. The union was able to tie Yellow Corp's hands behind their back and drown it. It's extremely concerning for these unions to have so much power. Now, let me move on here to, I have more writings on the unions that just got kind of mixed up, but this is the problem we are running into. The unions, again, are not for its members. It is for the union. It is on behalf to create regulation where a union has to thrive. Unions don't thrive in competitive environments. They don't. You can't be pro-union. You can't be pro-competition, because to be pro-union is, in the sense of what the Democratic Party is pro-union, you have to eliminate competition so the union thrives, so that the union gets the dues and the Democratic Party gets the donations. It is sad. It is extremely sad. And what the solution would be is to just make every state a right-to-work state. Let the people decide. Let the free market decide. And what you will see is union membership will fall off substantially. Why? Because there are things that didn't exist when unions came about in like the early, you know, late 1800s, let's say early 1900s. The employee benefit programs weren't there. Outside of Ford, they weren't there. And so you can see where a union would have some significance. But now, there's no reason. All large businesses provide benefits. There's more negotiating power now on behalf of the employee, whether they're in a union or not, than there ever has been. Why is it that unions, by the way, this issue rose with the Yellow Corp situation, they object to them purchasing labor outside of the union. Why? Because they want the union people to have a job. But they're also scared because the people they were purchasing labor from actually was getting higher pay. The union was paying higher and better wages to contracted workers than they were their actual employees. All unions do is increase the cost of employment and actually drive down unemployment rates up, because it limits new entry into the workforce. It makes it harder for people to enter into industries that are unionized. In the states where there's a forced union, they also have on average a higher unemployment rate. All unions do is create a barrier to entry. And while, yes, for some people, they do make you better off. They have, you know, I mean, the UAW deal, that they're trying to get through, raises wages significantly. It also cuts down the amount of work hours. But it's also going to kick out a lot of current employees in those industries. They're okay with threatening the employment of employees as long as the higher up employees or the more skilled employees get a better deal. Unions are a major problem. I'm not anti-union. I think you should be able to unionize, but it once you unionize and negotiate, there's no need for the union. Why is it that unions come out and they say that, oh, this business is taking advantage of our members, right? The socialists always say, exploiting the labor of our members. But the business is sticking to the fucking contract that the unions negotiated 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it would be, right? So how all they're doing is abiding by the contract that you negotiated. So any exploitation comes from the union itself. And then, once they negotiate a new contract and they come back and they're going to say at the end of that contract when they go to negotiate, oh, they're exploiting our workers and they're not getting a good deal. You're the one that negotiated the deal that they currently have. So that's where I'm going to end this. I mean, it's a major problem. And if UAW goes on strike, by the way, it's going to shake up the auto industry. Which in the past, remember in 2008, 2009, the whole pension deal. How many employees I've worked with? A couple of my clients, by the way, being in Tennessee, GM had a location there, and Nissan had a location. That's where their presence is in right in Murfreesboro, where I was living. Had many, many clients that worked for Nissan, but a lot of the GM people lost their pensions or lost their job. Because GM couldn't afford it when the market fell out. And GM, by the way, got bailed out by the government. So these contracts that are negotiated are going to cause the government to come in and have to bail them out when they fail. Instead of just letting them fucking fail and letting a new business come in place. No. It's just what is politically favorable is not economically favorable, and I often say that.